historic preservation efforts in Maine. Maine is full of beautiful old buildings that people would like to save, but rehabilitating and updating them can be really expensive. Historic preservation groups try to identify buildings which have unique value, then fundraise, look for grants, find tax credits, and other mechanisms to preserve them. Often these buildings find new life as apartments, stores, community centers, and more. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on Maine Calling, we will discuss historic preservation in Maine. We'll talk about the criteria for choosing buildings worth saving, how projects happen, which buildings are on Maine Preservation's endangered list, some of the bigger projects underway in Maine, and what towns and cities can do to help preserve their architectural heritage. Is there a building in your community you'd like to see saved? Maine Calling is next, but first, this news. From the Maine Public Radio studios, I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. Historic preservation may sound like it's about stuffy old buildings getting a facelift, but it is much more than that. When aging structures get rehabilitated, it can bring new life to communities and save valuable architecture from disappearing. Today, we're going to learn how Maine has benefited from historic preservation efforts and what's in store for the future. Joining me in the studio, Julie Larry. She is Director of Advocacy for Greater Portland Landmarks, and she's an architectural historian. And Kirk Mone is Director of the Maine State Historic Preservation Committee. As always, we want to hear from you. Have you always wondered what makes a particular building historically significant? Have you benefited from historic preservation projects in your community? Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. You can send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to the Maine Calling Facebook page. Welcome to both of you. And Kirk, I'll start with you. What does the Maine Historic Preservation Commission do?
We do a number of things, Jennifer. We are the state historic preservation office. We're responsible for identifying and protecting historic and archaeological resources across the state. We have a planning program. We work with communities in their own local preservation programs, and we supervise the rehabilitation tax credit program that you mentioned in the state. And we do public outreach. And then we're also one of our big programs is the review of federally funded, licensed, and permitted projects to assess their impact on historic properties.
Okay. So you're busy.
We're busy. Yes.
Julie, my understanding, and correct me if I'm wrong, is that Greater Portland Landmarks really started after the demolition of Union Station in 1961 in Portland. What has changed since then? What is the landscape of Greater Portland and the way of thinking about historic preservation changed?
Well, I think that, you know, we still see some demolitions. I don't know if some of your listeners may have heard of Portland has a moratorium up on Munjoy Hill currently because there's been a number of demolitions up there that have concerned the neighbors. So that aspect still exists and can still propel people to become interested in their neighborhoods and preserving their historic structures. But I think we look at it in a more positive light that it helps create and drive the economy of Portland. It's one of the things that helps bring tourists to the city of Portland, and they love the authentic character of our downtown and our neighborhoods. And I think it also appeals to people who are moving to Portland.
I'm guessing it's always a balance because you can't preserve everything.
Right.
You know, some things do need to be demolished. For some things, it does make more sense either because it's too expensive to rehab them. There's no historic value, or the best and highest use of that piece of property may not be the single family home that's been sitting there. So I'm curious, Kirk, what's the criteria? I know that you all do everything from choosing buildings to nominate for the National Register to just helping communities with their projects. How does one think about which buildings are important to save?
Well, Jennifer, the National Register of Historic Places criteria is really kind of the central baseline for assessing significance. And we apply that to lots of properties throughout the year. You know, what are the things that make it? Is it architecturally significant? Does it have a significant association with a person or an event? And those associations, I mean, we think about the National Registers, oh, you know, this national significance. But properties can be looked at, you know, for their significance at the local and state level as well. So, you know, a one-room schoolhouse in a community, that's important to show the education, the educational history and the building type in a community. So we use the National Register criteria. We try to assess the integrity of properties because buildings have to have significance, but they also have to have integrity. You know, they have to convey their significance. It's a process. Trying to learn about the property and the context for that property.
And Julie, I'm sure in a place like Portland, where more housing is desperately needed, for example, there is a tension. Yes. And how does one decide which building is worth fighting for and which really might not be?
Right. It's always a dilemma when you're looking at properties. Certainly for Munjoy Hill, there are some properties that were quickly thrown up after the Great Fire, and so they weren't necessarily meant to be long-term. They were an immediate housing need that happened over, 150 years ago. And so you have to look at the context of what that building looks like, what it used to look like, and its significance on the street and within the whole neighborhood. I think that one of the difficulties and one of the things that sometimes people think preservation is about is, you know, freezing it in time. And it's really more about managing the change than it is about preserving something in place the way it used to be, you know, 100 or 150 years ago.
Joining us on the line now, Kevin Bunker. He is founding principal of Developers Cooperative and has a background in both design and urban planning. Thanks for joining us, Kevin.
Hey, Jennifer. Good afternoon. How are you?
I'm great. Tell us about Developers Cooperative. What is it?
Well, Developers Collaborative is a group of independent real estate developers, and we collaborate on projects on the individual level, and we share office space. But generally, a lot of us come from an urban planning background, and as such, we tend to be interested in projects that we go under the general rubric of smart growth. We don't like to do a lot of sprawl development, and that takes a lot of different forms, and one of the forms that it's taken over the past decade for me in particular, especially since the state historic tax credit was expanded back in 2008, has been a lot of these historic preservation projects. So I've sort of fallen into it and done quite a few of them and had a lot of good luck with them.
One of the sort of bigger ones is the renovation of an old school in Portland. Tell me about that project.
Are you talking about, well, I'm doing three right now.
Oh, really? I was talking about the old Nathan Clifford School.
Clifford School. Yeah, we did that a couple of years ago, actually. That was a building that we purchased from the city for a dollar and redeveloped it as apartments. And it's been the most interesting thing about that project was probably that it was very important to the neighborhood that building stay and that building be reused, because that was the center of that neighborhood for literally 100 years, and nobody wanted to see that building go away. They were less concerned about what was going to happen inside it than that it have a responsible steward who was going to take care of that John Calvin Stevens structure and honor it in some way, kind of like Julie was saying.
So what are some projects you're excited about right now?
Well, the other two I'm working on in Portland, which are exciting, one of them is called the Mother House. It's the big building right up by the former Macaulay School. It's with a big gold dome on it. That one's in the middle of a conversion into 88 senior apartments, a mix of affordable and market rate. And that's the most exciting historic structure by far that I've ever worked on. You know, you can walk through the Nathan Clifford School and see a lot of beautiful detail and say, oh, my God, look at this historic character. There's more historic character in one part of one hallway of the Mother House than there is in some of the entire schools that I've redeveloped. And I've done, I don't know, 8 or 10 of them. The Mother House is just amazing.
It's called the Mother House because it was a convent, correct?
Exactly. Yep.
And the other that you're excited about?
The third one is called, this more interesting, in recent years, and Julie can probably talk a lot about this, that as so-called mid-century modern buildings have gotten a little more age behind them, a lot of those are becoming eligible for the tax credit. And they aren't the traditional things that when the layperson thinks about a historic building and how beautiful it is, they don't necessarily think of the mid-century modern, but they really do denote a style and a period of our history which is rapidly disappearing, because a lot of those buildings are going away very, very quickly, much quicker than some of the beautiful older structures. And there's a school up in the Riverton neighborhood that we were able to negotiate, again, buying from the city of Portland, working through a neighborhood process. And in this neighborhood, it was different. This neighborhood didn't want any housing. So we worked with them to try to find a use other than housing. And we're actually putting in a autism spectrum pre-K in there. We're moving called Children's Odyssey. And Children's Odyssey is going to be able to move in there and greatly be able to expand their mission in a way they never would have been able to done if not for the historic tax credit. So it's really a cool story and a real creative use of the credit beyond just, you know, we're going to do these great apartments.
Well, Kevin, thanks so much for calling in. Kevin Bunker, the founding principal of Developers Collaborative, an association of independent real estate developers who focus on building community. And let's talk about that, Julie. One of the projects he talked about, I know that, again, we talked about maybe some tension. I know that there's concerns about parking in neighborhoods. One of the things that's frustrating about a lot of old buildings is they were built before there were people with cars that needed parking lots. Is this an issue just in places like Portland, or is this an issue, and I'll ask you this too, Kirk, throughout the state?
Yeah, well, I actually live in Biddeford, and so we have a lot of the same issues. You know, the Biddeford Mills are slowly being redeveloped, and the Biddeford Main Street is coming back. And as part of that, you know, people are coming there in their cars. And so suddenly, on a Thursday night when you want to go out to dinner, parking becomes an issue. And so there's a, you know, where do we go? Do we build a parking garage? How do we manage parking in an historic downtown that, you know, that was developed before cars were an issue? And unfortunately, you know, a lot of buildings in the 50s and 60s were torn down. Some of the fabric was lost because for early parking. And so then it's also, what do you do with those parking spaces? You know, surface parking may not be the highest and best use for some of these downtown sites in various communities.
Yeah, and I think in places that are constrained by natural characteristics, for instance, I live in Gardner, and there's a small parking area behind the commercial buildings, but Cabasi Stream, you know, bounds that expansion area. So it's constraints that are very challenging for urban planners.
All right. Well, I asked Kevin projects he's excited about. Kirk, what's a project going on in Maine right now or on the horizon that you're really excited about?
Well, we've been, and this project's been in the news. This is the last big storm destroyed the brining shed or took the brining shed of the McCurdy Smokehouse in Lubeck.
Yes, it sent it to Canada, right?
Yes, it sent it to Canada. And we've had some conversations with the folks up there at Lubeck Landmarks, and they've managed to salvage the significant features of that building. And but that project up there, they have been working tirelessly for a number of years to salvage the last, what was the last commercially operated herring smokehouse in the country. And it's something I worked on the nomination to the National Register of Historic Places in the early 90s. And it's just this very traditional vernacular group of buildings. And they practiced this traditional smoking process up to the very end. And they're working hard to save that, and I think the attention that, unfortunately, you know, this recent storm brought to their work, I hope will spur them on to.
And now, will they be preserved as sort of a museum to that industry, or will they be reused as something different?
That is a museum to the industry, Jennifer. Yeah, and they have several of the historic buildings that were used in that process still exist, and. Yeah.
All right, Julie, what about you? What are you excited about right now?
Well, I'm very excited to see the Mother House when Kevin's group is done with it. We have an endangered property list at Greater Portland Landmarks, and we recently just crossed two of the properties off. Gorham Savings Bank restored a building at the corner of India and Commercial Street in downtown Portland that was associated with the St. Lawrence and Atlantic Railroad. And so we were thrilled that that just happened and that opened this last year. And then we also had been involved and advocating for the South Portland Armory, which is just as you come across the bridge into South Portland. And we were very excited to see at least a portion of that building was able to be saved and reopened this year. And we just had one of our events at the it's a karate studio on the top floor of the old Armory building. We had an event up there.
How important is it that so many of these buildings do find a new use? Kevin was talking about apartments for one, autism spectrum preschool for another. You're talking about a karate studio in South Portland. How important is it to find, in many cases, a contemporary use for these historic buildings?
Well, it's critical to their survival that they could find a new use. And I think one of the things that we're very lucky is that many of these older buildings are flexible enough to accommodate a new use, whether it's a school to housing or an armory to karate studio and convenience store. You know, particularly our mill buildings have very flexible spaces. A lot of our industrial buildings are very flexible. You know, the Schlotterbeck and Foss building, which is a tall building in Portland's Bayside for almost 100 years, was occupied as an industrial use. That company just moved out to an industrial park, and it's now been converted to housing.
Kirk, she mentioned the mills. Julie mentioned the mills. I remember an era when people would look at these old mills and say, they're so beautiful, but there's no way we'll ever be able to afford to renovate them. And now we look at the Bates Mill in Lewiston and many of the mills down in Biddeford and Saco, and it has happened. Why is that? Is there one thing that really made the difference?
I don't know if there's one thing. Jennifer, I think there was a community interest at some point. There was a person with vision who saw something in these buildings, who saw the flexible nature of them, as Julie was saying. There were incentives, and that, I think, was a key part of this. And it's not only the tax credits that offer incentives, but some other creative financing that allowed individuals to look at the embodied energy, the history of these buildings, you know, what they meant to the communities, and to say, we can do something here. I think there also may have been a point at which, for a long time, people might have had a negative feeling about these mills. And I think that changed at some point.
I can see that, going from being the place they didn't want their children to have to work to going to a place that represented their heritage.
Right.
Interesting. Yeah. Well, if you'd like to join the conversation about historic preservation in Maine, our phone number 1-800-399-3566. You can send an email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back.
You make Maine Calling possible, as does New England Cancer Specialists, 50 years of working toward better outcomes for Maine patients. Learn more at newenglandcancerspecialists.org.
The great thing about public radio is that it adds on to whatever you're doing, and it adds a lot. Maine Public Radio is a trusted news source, keeping you updated and informed about everything that's going on around the world and right here in Maine. It's Nora Flaherty, your All Things Considered host, reminding you about the value of this service in your life and the importance of your support to make it happen. 800-866-1475 or mainepublic.org. You can give right now or wait for Super Thursday on February 8th. We'll all be here, and public radio will be here each and every day with your support. Thanks for doing your part.
The second season of Maine Public Television's new high school quiz show, Maine, is about to get started. An academic high school quiz show testing Maine's brightest high school students on math, science, history, Maine, cultural events, and other topics. This year, the top 16 teams are competing on Maine Public Television to be the smartest in the state. When? Starting this coming Thursday at 8, then a rebroadcast the following Sunday afternoon at 5:30. Hope you can join us and watch all the fun. We have complete information, what's involved, how schools can register for next year, all at mainepublic.org. Just click on television.
And welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on the program, Historic Preservation in Maine. With me in the studio, Kirk Mone, who is director of the Maine State Historic Preservation Committee, and Julie Larry, director of advocacy for Greater Portland Landmarks. We invite you to join the conversation. Call 1-800-399-3566. Send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. Well, joining me on the line now, Greg Paxton, who is Executive Director of Maine Preservation. Thanks for joining us, Greg, and tell us what Maine Preservation does.
Thank you, Jennifer. Appreciate it. We are a statewide nonprofit organization, and we work all over the state. And we seek to empower local communities and promote preservation and construction best practices. We provide aid in the use of historic tax credit projects. And we have an innovative protect and sell program that rehabilitates and helps get buildings rehabilitated and safeguarded by new individuals who are willing to acquire and preserve them. Last year, we helped in 130 projects with rehabilitation, planning advice, evaluations of historic buildings and houses, and helping organizations throughout the state through our field service advisory program.
Greg, what should someone do if they know of a home that they think should be preserved?
Well, there are a number of things to do. One is to contact the Maine Historic Preservation Commission, Kirk's office, and see about getting the property listed in the National Register of Historic Places. They should also check with their local community and see if the building is protected or if their local community has a means to protect its historic buildings. And they can contact us, and we provide assistance to all these projects, and most of them come either by phone or email to us asking for help.
All right. Well, Greg, thanks so much for calling in. Greg Paxton, Executive Director of Maine Preservation. We'll start here with an email from Michelle. We are working to save and restore in Rockland an 1890s duplex, a mirror image side-by-side double house that happens to be the birthplace of Maine poet Edna St. Vincent Millay. It's interesting that the duplex was finally built, but with a modest approach to the interior, presumably for working-class families. Wellington Singhi was an ambitious man and a good example of an early real estate developer. In a time when the city was booming economically, he built housing along a street in between grander homes on smaller lots to accommodate the need for a growing working class. She goes on to talk about double homes throughout the state, but goes at the end asks, do your guests have any recommendations and advice to communities who wish to have historic preservation ordinances and designate their own city landmarks?
Well, I think it's admirable, and I wish that more communities did have historic preservation ordinances. There are just a few in the greater Portland area, and there are actually not that many across the entire state. You first have to start with knowing what you have, and that includes a community survey, identifying all your historic resources. And then I think it really takes a lot of education about what a historic preservation ordinance can and will do for a community. And those can be tailored in some respects to each community and the resources that they have. You don't have to tell people what color they have to paint their house, for example.
All right. We'll go to Robert calling from Buxton. Hi, Robert. Go ahead.
Hello, Jennifer. It's Bob Caritti. How are you doing?
That's what I figured. How are you?
I'm doing great. I'm calling just to pass along the great, wonderful time I have had working on all of the really fantastic historic buildings in Portland and throughout Maine. And people should go visit these places. They're a science lesson. They're a lesson in history, in technology, and all sorts of different aspects, and working on them has been the greatest pleasure.
Let me ask you this, Bob. Bob Caritti is, among other things, a very fine woodworker. When you have your hands and your tools on work of carpenters and craftsmen who lived 200 years ago, do you feel a connection with those people?
I certainly do. nearly 50 years ago, when I was just starting this work, I got to know an old gentleman in Gorham, Maine, whose name was Austin Alden. And he's a direct descendant of the Aldens that settled Gorham in like 1600 or 1630, I believe it was. And his knowledge, he was very giving and was happy to share ideas. And his knowledge went back to the century before that. So I was actually talking to somebody firsthand that knew these things that not many people know anymore, frankly.
Mm. Well, Bob, thanks so much for calling in and sharing. I'm going to move on to a tweet. This is from AI. I'm interested to know more about the relationship between not-for-profit historic preservation organizations and developers in Maine right now. How do you all work together?
Go ahead. Yeah, I think that Greater Portland Landmarks has a fairly good relationship with a number of the developers in the Greater Portland area, people like Kevin Bunker, because we know they do a great job in protecting the character-defining features, but are very thoughtful and creative in coming up with new uses for them. So I think it's important to have a good communication with folks in different areas, particularly when you get a phone call for somebody who, you know, has a problem. It's great to be able to say, hey, you should reach out and talk to this person. They may have had a similar challenge in developing a property.
And Kirk, what about statewide?
Well, we certainly as far as rehabilitation tax credits and development grants to help people at least preserve buildings that are owned by nonprofit organizations and municipalities. We're there to provide technical assistance. We do have a small grants program at times that can assist. But also, as far as working with developers, we provide some guidance. I think the work that Maine Preservation does, also they're working closely with developers around the state to look at projects. They're involved in projects themselves as well. So I think there's a good bit of technical assistance. Just reach out to Maine Preservation or to us and Greater Portland Landmarks at the local level, and we'll help you out.
We'll go to Madeline, who's calling from Newburyport, Massachusetts. Hi, Madeline. Go ahead.
Hi. I'm looking for anybody to give me a call if they have information on projects that involve historic churches nearly 300 years in business, going out of business and having to be sold. My understanding is it has to be sold to another church, and I wondered if anybody could research that and find out if that's a fact or not. And secondly, is there anybody that's been through sale of a church and converting it to something in a church but another use for the church? We don't need another church. We need to use this historic building in the Salem Village. We need to use this building and preserve the history of it for the neighborhood. And I'm looking to have some input into whether or not, first of all, it has to be sold to a church as a church, or if it can be sold to an entity and used as something else.
So Madeline, the people who are here in the studio with me work in Maine, and I'm not sure the laws are the same between Maine and Massachusetts where you're calling from, but you know there are churches in Portland that have different uses, so I know that's not a law here, Julie.
Right. I used to do a lot of work in Massachusetts as well before I joined Greater Portland Landmarks, and I'm not familiar with that particular criteria, but it's my experience that churches both in Maine and Massachusetts have had new uses. It may depend upon the denomination of the church. Certainly here in Portland, we have a church that's now a restaurant. There are churches that are now houses. There's churches in all throughout New England that have been converted to housing. We also have churches that become like the Maine Irish Heritage Center, which is an event space and resource center.
All right, Madeline, thanks for your call. We've got John on Facebook. How does the State Historical Preservation Group work with and coordinate the state's Main Street, Maine, and Maine Downtown Network communities? Why don't you just tell us what the projects are, too?
Yeah, the Main Street Maine program is actually run by the Maine Development Foundation and their Main Street Maine program. We are one of the advisory members of that that group. They have a group of volunteers that put in a lot of effort to working with these communities. They do a lot of hand-holding, technical assistance. They provide some financial assistance to these programs. I would, to really learn more about it, I would contact Ann Ball at the Maine Downtown Center. She can tell you a lot more about that program.
Okay. But this speaks to the fact that many organizations often work together on projects, correct?
Right, right. Yeah, and there, you know, we work with lots of nonprofit organizations of all types, whether it's Greater Portland Landmarks, Maine Preservation, you know, these groups, smaller entities within bigger entities like Maine Development Foundation, Maine Community Foundation. So it's, yeah.
We'll go to Paul, who's calling from Belmont. Hi, Paul. Go ahead.
Hi, Jennifer. It's nice to be with you. My name is Paul Brunacki, and I'm the coordinator for the Home Place team. And I wanted to share a very exciting project that we're working on. Is a collaborative effort between my team of preservationists. We're masons and carpenters and ship restorers, and we come together for oceanside projects and other, like large agricultural barns and things like that. And the project we're currently focusing on is a team building and skills building exercise for a large, heavy timbered wooden ramp for the Isle of Ho Lighthouse. And we're working with three young professionals and beginners on Isle of Ho to put together a two-day workshop slash actually restore and completely bring up to date and code the rampway that goes to the historic lighthouse.
Paul, that sounds great. What I'd like to do is invite you to post some more information on our Facebook page so people listening to the program today can learn more.
Yeah, we would have our tech graphics person do that, and I can get it online what your Facebook page is.
All right.
So
it's, yeah,
we'll
Maine
be,
Calling.
This is an ongoing project. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Paul. We have an email from David. I was recently awarded a project grant from the Maine Arts Commission to inventory and prepare work plans for threatened fine woodworking inside Maine's public buildings. The purpose of the grant is to begin the process of identifying Maine's threatened fine woodworking resource. I'm sorry, I'm having trouble saying that. The interior architecture of many public buildings includes exceptional design detail. Over time, these special details have become rare and precious, but sadly neglected. My question to the group is this. Besides the National Park Service's guidelines for rehabilitating historic buildings, do you have any information about published technical information to assist these decision makers on the best way to protect and restore the fine woodworking inside Maine's public buildings?
Yeah, there are the technical standards that he mentioned that the National Park Service puts out. There are also, I think there are a number of books and articles that have been published over the year. We have a resource library at Greater Portland Landmarks. You can reach out to us and we can probably find some resources for you or someone interested in that type of work on not only just fine woodworking, but on plaster work and plaster repair, all of the different elements that are involved in historic preservation projects.
We'll go to Tom calling from Portland. Hi, Tom. Go ahead.
Yes, I live in Portland on Munjoy Hill and have a barn that's from the mid-19th century when there was a paint factory up here. I restored a dozen years ago to its original condition. At the time, I don't think that Landmarks was interested in it for some reason, even though they took a tour of it. And now there's so much development on the hill, I've got people asking to basically buy the property to condo it. So, I mean, I want to know if there are any tax incentives now that our taxes are going up to simply keep the property and preserve it.
Yeah, the city of Portland is actually trying to figure out, and that will be coming up in the next couple of months, what tools are the best to use on Munjoy Hill to prevent demolition. And one of the things that they have discussed is perhaps is some sort of a tax abatement program. So I think if that's something you're interested in, you should reach out to your city councilor and to the city planning staff and let them know about that. I'm familiar with that building. I think it's at the corner of Wilson Street. I think that those kinds of buildings, particularly some of the outbuildings on Montjoy Hill that are part of its early history and are greatly going to become endangered because of the need for development and change up on the hill.
Okay, Tom, thanks for your call. And we do need to take another quick break. But before we do so, a word about tomorrow's program. As the Winter Olympics kick off later this week, we look at the current situation with North and South Korea. Email your comments or questions to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. You're listening to Maine Calling. We'll be right back.
You make Maine Calling possible, as does Evergreen Home Performance, offering energy-efficient windows and insulation to help homeowners achieve year-round comfort. More at evergreenyourhome.com.
We suspect it's safe to presume that you value this public radio station, and we all have no doubts just how wonderful it is to keep our vitally important on-air fundraisers to an absolute minimum. And we hope you understand, if you've never been a supporter, just how important your support is to keep the membership base, which keeps Maine Public Radio going, strong in the months ahead. So if you listen to and value public radio as part of your everyday life as a new member or an ongoing contributor, please call 800-866-1475 or visit mainepublic.org right now or on February 8th, Super Thursday. Thanks so much.
Mark Vogelzang, President and CEO of Maine Public, will be at Eggs and Issues this Thursday morning at 7 for a talk on why independent journalism matters. The Portland Region Chamber of Commerce's Eggs and Issues series takes place at the Holiday Inn by the Bay. Mark will talk about the state of public radio and television today, the strategic decision to increase in-depth reporting at Maine Public, and the role of NPR and PBS in the era of fake news. If you aren't a Portland Chamber member, you can attend and receive a special Chamber member price for the event. Please visit mainepublic.org and click on Events for all the details.
Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You're listening to Maine Calling. Today on the program, how historic preservation works in Maine. Joining me in our studio, Julie Larry, who's Director of Advocacy for Greater Portland Landmarks, and Kirk Mone, Director of the Maine State Historic Preservation Commission. Join our conversation, 1-800-399-3566. Going to Lindsay, calling from Portland. Hi, Lindsay. Go ahead.
Hi, Jen. How are you?
Good.
You guys are doing an important thing in talking about historic landmarks and salvaging those. My thing is to salvage the plant material that is equally historic, equally heirloom. I love to see that we're rescuing, you know, for example, the old barn. Board by board, we're taking it apart and using it again, and that's fabulous, but we are regularly trashing the old barn lilac that is equally old and equally gorgeous. And so what I'd like to start doing as a master gardener and just as a thrifty Yankee is to be saying, hey, you know, the botany around here is equally beautiful, and Lindsay, we need to put our energies toward rescuing that as well.
Lindsay, is there an organization that folks can contact if they think they have some sort of heirloom or heritage plant?
Me. Yeah, there's just me. I'm trying to do an effort called Replant Me. So I can send you my contact info and...
Well, I welcome you to put something on our Facebook page. So go to
Absolutely,
Facebook, / Maine Calling, and that'd be terrific. At today's post,
okay.
Thank you. We have a Facebook, speaking of, post from Cheryl. What benefit do you get being on the National Register of Historic Properties? I don't believe it offers any protection to the building listed. Is this true? Kirk, is there any protection that goes with the listing?
Well, Jennifer, there's a limited measure of protection, and that is that if there is a federally funded, licensed, or permitted activity that may have an effect on that property, that effect has to be taken into consideration during the planning. So it doesn't necessarily preclude the project from going forward, but hopefully there'd be an effort to avoid any adverse impacts or to minimize those impacts. It doesn't place restrictions on a property owner. So in that regard, you know, if you may think that, well, I'm protected if I'm on the register, that may not be the case. But there is that that level of protection, and there may be, in certain circumstances, incentives if a property is on the register. If it's an income-producing property, you might be able to take advantage of the tax credits for rehabilitation. or if it's owned by a nonprofit or a municipality, you may qualify for grants.
All right. Bob on Facebook writes, appreciate comments related to the old main railroad building at 222 St. John Street in Portland, reportedly sold to Maine Medical Center, with currently unclear to me plans and concern for lack of preservation plans. In addition, appreciate factoring in other impacts from such sales, including the planned 10-story parking garage near the building. Julie, is this a project you're familiar with?
Right. Maine Medical Center is embarking on an expansion plan, and one of the challenges that they have is parking and what to do with that. And so just down the hill from them is the former site of Union Station and some of the buildings that were associated with Union Station, and they're going to be putting a large parking garage behind the former administrative buildings that were associated with Union Station. So that's a project that we're closely following to see what how that will progress.
But you don't know?
We don't know what the parking garage is going to look like now. Yeah, they've reduced its scale from 12 stories, I believe, down to 10 now. But that is not the first part of their plan. So it's going to be a couple of years down the road.
All right. We'll go to Leslie, who's calling from Ellsworth. Hi, Leslie. Go ahead.
Hi there. Yes, I live in Ellsworth, and I'm part owner of a big building in Ellsworth that we now call the Main Grind Building. And my partner and I bought it about 12 years ago. And it was the former Masonic Hall building. And it's around 12,500 square feet of usable space. And we converted the building into a high-use space. It has a cafe in it, a couple of artisans, a massage therapist, a lawyer, a local conservation group. And my point being, we ended up with our own resources making this investment in our community. Ellsworth has been great to work with. We found them. They were very helpful. We had to subdivide the building. We had to do all these things. They held our hand during the whole process. But one of the things that I would like to point out is that buildings like the Masonic Hall building and other buildings like that in various town communities are not there. They haven't paid property taxes. And once these buildings go into private holdings, like in our case, you have to pay taxes. And, you know, depending on the community you're in, the taxes could be quite high. And what I would suggest for any municipalities who are listening to the show, that I think people like ourselves who've used our own resources and our own time and sweat equity and all that jazz, I think consideration should be taken for some type of tax consideration, a new formula, so if it comes off, it goes into the tax rolls, that there's an incentive for other people like ourselves mm-hmm. to make these kind of purchases.
Interesting point, Leslie. Kirk, is this
logic there?
Kirk, is this something people have asked for and fought for before in Maine?
They have, Jennifer. In fact, many years ago, the legislature gave towns the authority to establish a local tax. They didn't call it a rebate, but it's an incentive program in which you basically get some return of taxes that you've paid, local property taxes. I think the town of York, to my knowledge, is the only town that ever developed that program, but I'm not sure if they funded it. So there's something on the books, but I don't know that the towns have really picked that up.
Leslie, thanks for your call, and good luck with your project. Going to Janet, calling from Walderboro. Hi, Janet. Go ahead.
Hi. Let me just turn up the radio. Thank you. I'm involved with a project to restore the Waldo Theater in town, which was recently, well, last year, placed on the most endangered spaces list. And I was wondering if you could explain how historic tax credits work and if you're a nonprofit organization, if you qualify briefly.
Janet, I would have a conversation with Greg Paxton, particularly with the nonprofit side of things, because they've worked with nonprofits, and there may be some provision to allow you to take advantage of that. Normally, we see the tax credits used by income-producing properties that are owned by private individuals, but I would follow up with Greg on that.
All right. Good luck, Janet. An email from Scott. A new resource will be available for historic homeowners this fall. when Tilbury House Publishing of Thomaston publishes my new 480-page book, Restore Your Historic Home, The Comprehensive Guide for Homeowners, which will be distributed nationally by W.W. Norton. Jenny on Facebook writes, many years ago, I bought an old Baptist church in Damariscotta Mills. The Baptist congregation had voted to sell it. Then a ceremony was held to de-sanctify the space. The current owners have done amazing restoration to preserve this important gateway structure. Bill writes, the one question, this is in an email, the one question that has always been on my mind was restoring the St. Dom's project on Gray Street. I'm assuming he's talking about Portland here. It would have been less expensive and more energy efficient to make replicas of the windows than restore old inefficient windows and then install aluminum storm windows over them. Would you please ask your guests to explain the historic difference between preserving the old or using a replica?
Sure. Well, there's actually been studies and tests that have been conducted on restored historic windows with either an interior or exterior storm that shows that the heat loss is about the same as it is with some new replica windows. And certainly what how I came to historic preservation was kind of through the environmental movement. And I hate to see these things go into our landfills. And there's, you know, a great deal of energy that goes into producing new materials. And so when you look at the environmental, the actual production costs and the heat loss, there's actually a savings over a period of time if you restore your historic windows. And particularly for a building like the church and the former girls' school on Gray Street, I think that those windows are large and fairly significant, and it would be enormously expensive to replicate some of those.
I have an email from Richard. New England Steam Corporation is preserving and rebuilding the former Maine Central Railroad steam locomotive number 470 in Hancock, Maine. The locomotive stood as a park feature for 62 years in Waterville. Purchased in 2014, it was moved in 2016. 470 remains the largest surviving steam locomotive in all of New England. Our purposes are preservation of the locomotive, educational use of a living classroom, and heritage tourism. This is as important as building preservation, since the locomotive is unique and a whole experiential event. Kirk, are you familiar with this project?
I am, Jennifer. Yes, we've had several conversations with Richard and the group, and we're looking forward to following their restoration of that locomotive and hopefully getting it listed in the National Register at some point.
All right.
Yeah, in addition, there are ships in Maine that are listed on the National Register, so it's not always just about buildings and preservation.
Cheryl on Facebook asks, what does Maine Preservation offer for homeowners? If someone's trying to rehab a beautiful old family home, is there anything Maine Preservation can do to help with it? Do you provide guidance on grant requests, submissions, anything else to offer? I know we don't have Greg on the phone with us anymore, but Kirk, you work closely with Greg. What do you know about what resources are available generally for Maine Preservation and other organizations for someone trying to rehab an old home?
Well, you know, Jennifer, at least in Maine, and I'm sure this is the case across the country, private individuals are, you know, the real stewards of a vast percentage of our historic properties. And unfortunately, there's not a lot of assistance for them. At various times in the past, the Congress has taken up the idea of a homeowner tax credit that would be something like the commercial rehab credit. But that's never really gained too much traction. I think people live in historic buildings. They care for them. They love them, and they deserve a lot of credit for doing that. Because we all benefit from the preservation of these historic properties. But I'm afraid that there's just not a lot of incentive for, you know, the individual homeowner.
Yeah. Would you agree, Julie?
Yeah, it is. It's true. And it's not just here in Maine, across the country. There are some municipalities that have created incentives for homeowners, but there's nothing really like that here.
Mm. Kirk, you know, we've been talking about the federal historic tax credit sort of sprinkled throughout this program. What is that program? And I know that people are concerned about it. How safe is it?
Well, it was in this the last effort that the Congress looked at the tax program. Initially, the tax program, which has been in existence since the 70s, was eliminated. And then it was put back into the budget, and it was ultimately modified. Instead of being taken in a single year, it's phased in over 5 years. So that preserved the 20% value of the credit at the federal level. It also had the effect of preserving the state credit here in Maine, because our state credit is tied very directly to that. So we're going to see some changes. I think that the Kevin Bunkers, the developers, will ascertain how that phased incremental approach now to the credit will change the dynamic a bit, but we're hopeful that it won't change it too much because it's been extremely successful since the main credit was passed or revised in 2008. We've had 88 certified projects across the state in 15 of the 16 counties and in 42 different towns. So it's been very successful.
And how important is that for some of the projects here in Portland?
Well, it's very important. I think about almost 20 of those projects that Kirk mentioned are either here in Portland or in one of the greater Portland communities. I think it's been a very important aspect of the economic development for some of the surrounding communities. And certainly here in Portland, it's really helped with the housing crunch. You know, a number of the projects that Kevin has been working on, I mentioned the Slaughter and Beck and Foss building, a number of the projects that have been utilizing the historic tax credits have been for housing, which is something that's desperately needed here.
And Jennifer, if I just might add, I want to thank the congressional delegation because they really got behind this. They understand the value of this in Maine, and they were very supportive of it.
Mm. All right. It's about time to go. But before we do so, I understand there's something big in the historic preservation world coming up in Maine. Kirk, what are you planning for? What are you excited about?
Well, as we all know, in 2020, Maine will be celebrating its bicentennial. The Bicentennial Commission had its organizing meeting last week, and we just remind everyone to keep posted for events and things that will help us all celebrate Maine's bicentennial.
Hear, hear. Thank you both for being here today and talking about historic preservation. The voice you just heard, Kirk Mone, the director of the Maine State Historic Preservation Commission. And Julie Larry is here as well. She's director of advocacy for Greater Portland Landmarks, as well as an architectural historian. Nikki Shields ran the board today. Owen Manahan took your calls. You can find past editions of Maine Calling, as well as a link to our audio archives at mainecalling.org. Today's program will be broadcast again tonight at 8. Maine Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. Tomorrow on the program, the situation in North and South Korea. I'm Jennifer Rooks, and you've been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.